hit the likes. If you don't, you know.
Whoa.
I'll make sure you hit those likes. You hear me?
He's gonna pummel you into a beating. Hey guys, welcome back to the Making Magic Podcast. I'm Sean Jay, your host. I'm a professional magician, speaker, and 3D designer. And this is all about inspiring interviews with the movers, the shakers, the visionaries, and the makers, the wizards behind the curtain that make the magic for you. Now, if this is your first time to the channel, thank you so much for joining us. If you're already subscribed, and if you're not, why the heck aren't you? Click the subscribe button down below. Give this video a like if you enjoy the content, or maybe you've seen other videos in the series, or maybe you just like listening to the sound of my voice on Spotify or one of the other podcast apps that you choose while you're driving the car or cleaning up around the house. Either way, I really appreciate you joining us because my next guest is very special. And I say that about all my guests, actually, because they're all special in their own unique way. But he's known as a triple threat in the industry. He's a large stage illusionist, a close-up magician, and an inventor slash fabricator of magical illusions. His name is Ray Lum. And his large stage show is known as a cross between Kung Fu Hustle and Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon. He's also a Bruce Lee fan, and so am I. So we had a lot to talk about, and we went deep in this interview, folks. I hope you enjoy this inspiring interview with one creative powerhouse. Ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Ray Lum. Here with us, and I'm going to ask you, Ray, what would be the very first thing, first prop or anything that you ever made, that you ever invented? And it could be good or it could be bad. And funny stories are always welcome, without revealing methods, of course.
The first major prop, well, before I invented something, I was too busy doing restorations. I was taking everything from Thayer and Owen Magic stuff apart to learn from it. Well, I remember when I was on tour, 1989, 1990, in Japan, a promoter was walking with me to the grocery store, and I'm a big fan of melon soda, and I said, yeah, I want to stock up my whole hotel room with melon soda, so where can I get that? So he walked with me to this store, and on the wall, it's full of gumball machines. It's weird as hell in Japan, you know. It's like a sea of gumball machines on the wall, and I said, huh, what if I want that one up there? You know, how do you get up there? But, you know, just seeing that inspired me. I looked up and up on the wall and I said, there's something about that. There's a trick to this. So I never thought about anything yet until I was on stage, right? And the promoter said, you should do something with that. And I say, yeah. But, and then that stuck with me in my head. So I was on stage, I was doing origami. I remember this vividly. I was pushing the origami in a circle, and boom, like a Mack truck, it hit me in the head. A ring vanished and it ends up in the gumball machine. I go, yes, that's it right there. And then throughout my whole, I don't know about you, but throughout, if you get this idea on stage, you just want to write it down quick. And all my ideas, when I get one, I want to write it down so I don't forget it. So on stage, it just stuck with me, and I forgot my lines and I forgot my positioning. You know, when you're on stage, it's supposed to be like a machine, you know, you want to control the audience. It's like, I tell people it's like getting into a fight or a boxing ring. You know, you lose that concentration, you're done. It's just like when you're on stage, if you lose each and every eye, you're gonna mess up. So I try my best not to mess up because the idea was so good in my head. I go, I think I got a method. So throughout the whole show, I just ran through it. And I quickly ran through my hotel and I go, yeah, I'm gonna jot this down. I go, this is what I'm gonna do. So make a long story short, I told the promoter, buy every gumball machine in history here, everyone, and send it to my room. And then I had a Dremel tool. I start cutting everything, gaff tape. The first prototype went out on stage. It was gaff tape. It was falling apart. But yep. The method, I knew, I said, you know what? This is gonna work. And then I had a sea full of magicians, Japanese magicians, watching me closely. And then I did all my illusions. Afterwards, they were backstage going, wow, that's some good stuff. And I go, what, my illusions? He goes, no, that gumball machine got me. What is it? I never seen anything like this before. So here's what's funny. I said, you know what? I think I got something good going, right? So back then, you know, there's no cell phones. You had to run down to the lobby to use the phone. So I called up my good buddy, Tim White, which was the original guy on the Copperfield team way before Chris Kenner.
Oh, okay.
The original guy was Tim White and Joni Spina. So I called up Tim and I go, hey, Tim, can you talk to, and he's close to Johnny Thompson. I go, can you talk to Johnny? And plus you know everything, because those are the two main guys that are like, pretty much like Teller. They know everything, right?
Yes, yes, they're like everything. The Yodas. Of our industry.
Everything that has to, like every movement of magic. I said, can you ask Johnny and plus yourself, could you look around if I came up with this ring and gumball machine? And they said, wow, that's, I never heard of it, but I'll ask Johnny. So next thing you know, there's no phones yet. So yeah, go down the lobby and you have to wait until you get a message, you know, on paper. You had to ask I don't know how old you are, but you know.
older than you think. I just turned 30.
Oh, man, you're a young buck. I'm 55, man.
Oh, man. Come on now, Ray. You're not that old.
So I go way back, man.
And you remember when the cell phones were like briefcases. That's probably what you're thinking, right?
Yeah, before that. I didn't even have that. You know, I had to run down to the lobby and ask the main bell guy, is there a message yet? Did I get a message from Johnny Thompson or Tim White? And then you get it on paper. I go, yes. And then it said on the paper, Johnny has seen nothing in magic with a gumball machine, right?
There you go.
I forgot what they wrote. And then Tim White said, no, I've seen nothing. I asked, yeah, I even ran it through Copperfield and they never seen anything like that. And I said, I got something good going. So I made this gumball machine. I used it on stage and this Japanese magician came up and said, you know what? I got to have this. And I'm going, no, I'm not going to release it yet. And he starts counting money. He goes, here's 3,000 American money. Take it. I'm going, nah. And I was embarrassed because that thing was held together with gaff tape, you know? It was right. Falling apart, but the method worked. It looked ugly as hell, but it worked.
That's how all prototypes start. They look like a mess.
It was just
a
prototype, yeah.
But if it works, that's the important thing. Then you know you've got that core mm-hmm. concept there, and then you could just refine and refine and refine mm-hmm. over time.
Exactly.
Which is what you did.
So, I went through 8 methods before I got to my method.
8 methods, guys. Listen up, okay? Mm-hmm. If you don't get it right the first time, that's not the time to give it up. Usually the answer is somewhere down the road. Franz Harari, in episode 2, he said usually it takes him at least 6. And I was actually surprised that he said only 6, because for me it's like 10 usually.
Oh, yeah.
So it's 8 for you.
Yeah, well, the lumball machine went through 8. And here's what's funny. So the funny story is I got the message from actually, was it Tim White or Johnny? I think it was Johnny. Johnny Thompson wrote, I got it on my front desk, and it says, somebody's using your gumball machine in FISM. I was all excited. I said, at first I was excited because I sold so many in Japan. And maybe I said, and I was stuck there for like a year. So I said, maybe someone took it and used on FISM. Didn't think nothing of it, right? So then Johnny came back. I think FISM was over, and Johnny said, I think yours was that guy knocked yours off.
Oops.
And you know, I'm not gonna say any names, you know. I'm not gonna stoop to his level, you know.
Ray's gonna execute the beatdown, the kung fu beatdown from Ray Lum.
Well, the guy is a knockoff artist, so hey, you know.
That's what just I'm what not he gonna does. Say
but the industry knows who he is. He knocked off, you know, a few illusions. So, you know, I'm not gonna stoop to his level, but you know. Nope. It's just shameful how the industry, you know, and then these guys buy that stuff. It really breaks my heart because, yep. You know, my reputation, I don't have to say anything, not to toot my own horn, but I don't have to say, you know, I'm not a knockoff artist. I got all these rights coming to me. You know, I got Andre Cole's head mover rights, squeeze box. I got Mark Kalin's rights on his stuff. You know, I'm getting rights from Thomas Moore on his rap. So, I mean, I'm respected. So, but this other guy, hey, he's a knockoff artist. So, you know, just, it's just very shameful how you spend so much years refining it.
And I get it.
What's terrible is he took my first method, which I failed, and he released that and used that. And so that was number one. So, and then I said to myself, you know, at first I say, yeah, let's do the easy way out, which I kind of stopped myself because I always said, never take the easy way out on building and in performing and routining. So I said back then, I slapped myself in the head because I was so excited with the first method. I said, yeah, let's try it. It worked, but I said, you know what? This can go further. I need to show the audience that the first prize is a normal prize. And then the second prize is the one that the ring comes out. So I don't want, you know, the knockoffs like the ones you see on, even the current knockoffs, you know, from Asia, it's in the first prize. Why? You can't show.
There's no suspense.
It makes no sense. And then collectors came out with their own version, which, you know, it's their version, but I'm not, you know, but, you know, they didn't, you know, give me no credit for inspiration. So whatever. But
right.
They came up with their own version, which is in the third prize, which I kind of, you know, hey, you know, at least give me some credit, but whatever, right?
Right.
But that's how the industry is, right?
That's how it goes. I know.
Everybody, you know, from Kevin James to all of us that bust our ass on these new ideas, and then someone comes along and go, ooh, yeah, let's gank that, you know? And it's like Chance Wolf too, you know, coming up with all these nice drawings and on the in image of his props, and then somebody else comes along and this Xerox it, you know, and you
know. That's an issue in the artistic and the creative industry. People will always steal and copy, and so it's definitely wise to continue to create and just to, you know, you have to accept it for what it is. You do the best that you can to try to stop it. It's almost impossible, but it always helps to call people out and do the best you can. But I mean, ultimately, just like Franz Ferrari mentioned, he said, people like that are always going to be known for singing someone else's song. And it's just, they're always going to be the second best version. They're never going to be the Ray Lum, whatever. It's just gonna, that's what they're gonna be known for. So that should kind of help put your mind at ease and all the other creators that yes, they can try to rip stuff off, but it's just, there's always only one original and people people, I mean, if they see both, they'll understand, okay, that's why there's a huge difference here. And then you get the respect. That's why you have the respect that you do over time. And that's why I have you on the show rather than this other knockoff person that's never going to ever get on my show, ever. So what was the original core reason why you made it, and what did you learn from it? And this is, by the way, this is just what kind of like the thing that Ray's known for, like his main thing. He does many other things, custom illusion fabrication for many great magicians, but this gumball thing, you may have even seen other magicians perform it on cruise ships or whatever, but the core concept, the original, it's Ray. So what was the reason why you made it, and what did you learn from making it?
Well, why I made it was the Japanese promoter. When we first walked into that grocery store, he said, you should do something with that.
Oh, do something with that. I got you.
And then that triggered my creativity in my brain. I said, you know, at first, you know, nothing comes to you. You go, it's a gumball machine. But then all of a sudden, like all ideas, it hits you when you least expect it. I mean, Johnny said that. When you least expect it, when you're sleeping. Mm-hmm. I remember we're sitting down on a table at this party. He hits me. He said, you ever get this idea like in your dream? I go, yeah, it's weird. When you wake up, all of a sudden, you solve the problem. You get the dream, but then when you wake up, you solve the method. Mm-hmm. And we laugh. He goes, yeah. And then
Your subconscious mind is actually busy working on it when you're asleep.
It's just weird. And then the ring and gumball idea was just, again, being on stage, and then it just hit me. Well, actually, to tell you the truth, when I first seen it, when I walked back to the hotel, in my head, as an illusionist, I go, yeah, let's make a big jumbo version, make a crystal casket, you know? And I say, yeah, let's make a gumball machine that's a crystal casket, fill it with fog, and all of a sudden a girl appears. But then I say, that's kind of stupid, isn't it?
Well, not all ideas are good ideas, but some of those stupid ideas can lead to great ideas later down the road. That's what we find out, right?
Yeah.
Okay. And knowing what you know right now, through all of your experience, what would you wish you would have told your earlier self to prevent making the mistakes that you've made today? That's a bit of a deeper question.
Well, here's the thing. I don't know if you guys know that Tommy Wonder was my mentor. Tommy Wonder and Lee Grable. Lee Grable started me in illusions. And on one day, I remember going back, Lee said to me, man, you already toured, you already did a lot. You need to search for Tommy Wonder. And I was a kid. I didn't, you know, I was doing touring when I was like 19, 20s. He always said, you know, you're refurbishing, you're creating new stuff. Why don't you seek out Tommy Wonder? And then I remember Lee kept saying, you remind me of him, how you think, how you do things. It's just something about you. I go, okay, who's this Tommy guy, right? So I'm over here a stalker, and I went to every IBM, SAM, every convention when he came to the States. I followed him. I followed him religiously. I was stalking him, and he always sees me in the back taking notes. I stalked him so much that I can do his lecture, actually. So one day, I remember this vividly. I sat there, and I said to Tommy, I've been following you. He goes, yeah, I know.
I know.
And then we started hitting it off. And it's a long story, but I'm trying to make it short, where we hit it off. And then he said, yeah, I see you. I know that you hung out with Lee Grable. And I go, yeah, Lee told me about connecting with you. And then we kind of talked and we hit it off. But then we left it as that. And a couple more lectures, and I followed him. And then he said to me, "Ray, come here." And I wait till everybody left him. You know, everybody's like jocking him, like he was like, you know, the guy's God, right? Everybody puts him on a pedestal. But I waited till everybody left, and so I waited for everybody to take pictures with him, and then everybody left, and then he looked at me and said, "Ray, come here." He goes, "What are you?" And then we started talking. It was weird. He goes, "Yeah, let me talk to you. What do you think of this? Since you fabricate," and then, you know, I wasn't a fabricator back then. I was just a performer, right? Mm. But I always tell him that, you know, I hang out with Tim White, and I learn off the Copperfield stuff. And he goes, "Yeah, come here. What do you think of this?" And this is Tommy Warner, Nestle Boxes 3.
Ah, which you then made and did your own whole amazing tribute to that.
Yeah.
That's its own amazing animal that you made there. That's incredible.
Oh, yeah. We'll get into that in a little bit. But which is, man, I just wish he was alive. I could show it to him. And I think he'll fall off his rocker. But you know, he showed me that, and he showed me the birdcage. He showed me everything. His floating birdcage and his vanishing birdcage, which I'm a big fan of all the vanishing birdcage. So so from there, again, that was one bonding moment. And then later on the years, more bonding, dinners, lunch, and he kept showing me stuff. He goes, "Hey, take a look at this." And then he goes, "What do you think of this?" And in my head, I'm going, "Man, should I tell him?" And already my head is going, you know, I'm already know what to do. Like when you see the Nesta Boxes 3 from him, it's all fiberglass. It's all like mine. It's all the box that it rides up on. It's all aluminum. His is all like wood. And he said, "Yeah, every time it goes up, it jams." I go, "Yeah, why don't you make it all out of aluminum?" And then when I say something like that, he looks at me like this. And then, you know, Tommy hates everybody, right? Tommy was the guy that he only wants to deal with like the best people in the world. And he throws out all the losers that he calls them. He goes, "Yeah, I hate, you know, here's a pressure talk. You know, I hate when magicians are, you know, you ever deal with people like that?" And then that's it. I'm back
all the time.
I know. Until you become a fabricator, you go, "Man, Tommy is right." You know, but Tommy is, you know, that guy. I love that guy because he's a man's man. You know, if he hates you, he'll say, "You know what? I hate you."
Straight up, just right to your face.
No question. Tommy's balls on, man. He'd be smoking that cigarette. He goes, you know, that motherfucker don't know his shit. You know, I don't want to talk to him. You know, that I'm going, damn, you know, I was a kid, you know, I'll go, "All right, you know," and I go, "Tommy, you know, let me see that box, Nesta Boxes 2. And he goes, "Okay, Ray, what do you think of this? What should I do? Because I'm having some problem." And I'm going, "I don't know, should I tell him the truth?" Or because then he'll say, "I'm like, you know," you learn to keep quiet and you learn to be cool with him. Then he opens up more, and then more and more, like, oh man, the joy of sitting there when you see the birdcage, a vanishing birdcage, how he held it with his fingertips and he shows it all around, and then he makes it vanish. The two top vanishing birdcage in the world is Tommy's and Walter Blaney's. Those are the two best of the best. And what Tommy did to the birdcage was this, the machining on that thing, oh my God. Well, anyways, he showed me so much stuff that is just, it's like going to Stanford for being a doctor.
It's a whole master class on fabrication.
Yeah, being next to him, it was just priceless, you know. And plus, Tommy hated everybody. It's not like you can't even get close to that man. He has to really.
He's a weird guy. Definitely a weird guy.
But he's cool as hell if you know him. If you know him, he opens up. He goes, and then and here's the thing. I asked them, he asked me, Ray, what do you want to do in later on in your life? You already accomplished performing. What do you really want to do? Because he said that to me, and I was wondering why he said that to me. He said that to me because he sees himself in me. Because he said that one day, like a couple months later, because I asked him, why did you say that? Well, to answer that question, I said, and I was a punk kid, so I said, Tommy, I want to be you. That's what I want to be, do. And then he said, okay, tell you what, let me give you a little advice. And I remember this vividly. He puts his hand on my shoulder. He goes, listen, kid. He always calls me kid. Listen, kid. Work with every illusion builder in the world. Wait. That's not going to work because you're a performer. They hate performers. So good luck with that. And he laughs, right? And he's smoking a cigarette. Yeah, you would never get that. And then he goes, I don't know. But you need to really work with everybody, because that way you can take the good and the bad. You know, go work with John Gaughan. Go work with Bill Smith. Go work with Owen Magic. And here's the funny thing. I started working with Tim White, which is the Copperfield, right? The second, you know, the main guy, you know, right next to Copperfield on some of the Copperfield stuff. Then all of a sudden I worked with Illusion Projects. I got a call from Illusion Projects, moved over to Illusion Projects. Then from there, I went to Bill Smith, then to Mike Michaels, and to Owen Magic. And Owen Magic was the last person I worked with. And then I sat back and I said, wow, this is a trip. You know, you start to think about your life, you go, wow, Tommy said to call everybody and work with everybody. Mm-hmm. And I never need to pick up the phone. Everybody just kind of asked me, why don't you help me out? And then it was like, and then the final one was Alan Zagorski picked up the phone and said, why don't you come? I heard you work with everybody in Vegas. Why don't you come work with me? I go, wow. And I was, when I was a little kid, you know, I'm ripping apart Owen Magic stuff, Thayer stuff, you know, hanging out with Les Smith. You know, Les was always a grumpy guy. It was cool. And we got along, you know, because he was like Tommy Wonder. He hated everybody. So, but he was always cool with me. And then Alan was cool with me. And then, but the learning experience from Owen Magic was intense too. I mean, the old school stuff. I'm old school. I will never touch computer drawings. Everything's off of a napkin.
Your favorite.
All my stuff is, Tommy Wonder said this. If it's not it's not handcrafted, if you have to use a machine, you know.
Sure.
The only thing you should use is a machinist, but everything else has to be handcrafted, you know. And he said that's real magic building.
I'm gonna try to bring this all back. And great stories, by the way. Just to distill and. So after all of these experiences, you followed Tommy Wonder's advice and you were working with all these major players, great, amazing builders in the industry. After going through all that, was there anything that you wish that you could have told your younger self?
I was going full circle to answer that.
Okay, I didn't know. Okay.
I'm sorry. I didn't have anything I should tell myself, because Tommy was already slapped the back of my head and tell me what not to do and what to do.
So you are in the rare case of having a world-class mentor, basically.
Well, Tommy was that guy. He did everything. I mean, Jesus. I mean, that's, if there was a God in magic, that's who it would be, you know? That guy's like, the Thor of magic.
Pretty
right?
much, yeah.
I mean, he's the one, you know, hanging with him. He told me stuff. Hey, don't do this. Don't do that. Watch out for this. Don't talk to this guy. Buy this. Buy that. Buy that tool. Hey, wait a minute. That's an Don't talk to him. You know, that so was, Tommy.
He was on it.
Yeah, Tommy was like my second dad, actually, put it that way. I mean, without him, oh, yeah, in the books. Now here's another thing, how intense Tommy was. I go, Tommy, man, I'm trying to study your books. I looked at every page. I kind of absorbed it. I really absorbed the book. And I said to him, you know, I'm trying to map out this Nest of Boxes 3. I'm drawing it up. It doesn't make sense, Tommy. It really does make sense. And I remember this vividly. He's like, come here. You know, in my books, all the hard stuff are in riddles. You know that, son? And he goes, they're in riddles. I put him in riddles because if these assholes build my shit, and this is really, I remember this movie.
I'm gonna have so much bleeping to do on this episode. This is gonna be so funny.
Oh, hey,
it's okay,
hey.
I want you to be yourself. But this is hilarious for me, I'm just thinking. Continue on.
Hey, I'm just telling you,
this is the unedited.
Truth.
I'm bringing
you the
unedited.
The truth. This is, you know, I'm trying to go back in time with everybody and just give you a seat right next to Tommy. You know, he said, look, if I want people to build my shit, I want them to work for my shit.
I remember reading that in his book. Yes, yes, yes.
And I said, what? And then, you know, my mind wasn't fully developed yet. And I said, huh? He goes, you'll understand.
You'll find out sooner or later.
And then, when I completed the Nest of Boxes 3, I say, oh, Tommy, you're a tricky one, man. Not only you're a great performer, you're a great freaking Riddler, you know?
He's literally like the Riddler character from the Batman
series. Exactly.
It's almost like they made the Riddler around Tommy Wonder. They even almost look alike.
Exactly.
It blows my mind.
Yeah, exactly. You read it and you go, oh, you know, he's a genius, man. He hides, not only you see him as a performer, he's such a genius. Well, he's like that when he makes a book. So I copy that. Like when my building, I tell people my building is, I have a concept when I do a build. It's layers and layers of detail, and I put layers and layers of it. If you rip my Tommy Wonder Nest of Boxes 3 apart, I deliberately put in layers, that way it can't be knocked off. Rip it apart and you'll destroy it and it is unusable.
You'll destroy the layers that would have given you the hints if you tried
to
rip it apart. Yeah.
Layers of details on that. So anyhow, Tom, so to answer your question, Tommy beat my brain into a pulp so I don't make mistakes. Because Tommy said, you know what? I made so many mistakes and I see how I see your road. That guy was a genius because he already sees my future. He goes, I see your future. I want to help you. Here's what you're going to do.
Priceless. That is incredible.
Oh, yeah. Oh, man. And I tell everybody that. You know, I tell everybody that. And then people will see me. You know what's funny? At every convention, you see these guys like going like this. Yeah, why does this stupid kid get to hang with Johnny? I mean, Tommy, you know? They said that with Johnny Thompson, too. Yeah, why does this kid get to hang with him, you know? But, you know, I was one of those, you know, starving artists, you know, like, I want to learn. I want to suck up every you know, legends. I like to hang with legends.
You and I are a lot alike. That's like ever since I was 12, started magic. That's been my thing. Yep.
Mm-hmm. And then I noticed that if you latch onto a legend, like Norm Nielsen is like the man. That's a legend's legend, you know.
Legend.
He's right next to Tommy. Tommy, Norm, Johnny Thompson. Oh my God, those guys are freaking, dude. If there was a God, those guys are gods, you know. That's all I can say. You know,
okay.
The stuff that I learned from everybody, all of them, it's just priceless, you know.
So to summarize, basically, you are lucky enough, and I would strongly encourage everybody to do this if you can, to humble yourself. You're following your passion of your craft, and then you found somebody that was willing to give you the time of the day, and that somebody was not just a random somebody. That was one of the best minds of his time. And you just absorbed everything from that, and you were a great student, and therefore it shaved down your mistake to success ratio, and you achieved more success and less mistakes because of that mentorship. That is priceless, and that's what I always do. I go, who knows more than me? How can I learn from them? Because I know nothing right now. You have to empty your mind. Be formless, be shapeless, like water. I've done a little Bruce Lee studying myself. Actually, I was into Bruce Lee before I was into magic, so I.
There you go.
I know a bit about it.
You work out?
I do.
Good.
And I was I was heavily into martial arts when I was younger. Martial arts, and it's funny. I was just on a plane ride, and there was a Bruce Lee documentary called Be Water. And it was probably the only movie I'll ever want to watch on a plane. I don't watch like standard silly movies. It's literally mindless entertainment. But this one was great. Be Water, the Bruce Lee documentary. So I want to get back. Oh, go ahead.
It's great. Oh, and before I forget what your the advice that you were giving earlier, it's true advice. I mean, I didn't get close to these legends unless you're you had to be humble. I see a lot, you know, Tommy said, hey, I kid you not, Tommy said this to me, and this is why I stayed the person I am. Tommy said, I like you, Ray, because you're not a dick. And then I said, and then he said with a cigar in his mouth, he goes, you know why I hate everybody? He goes, people are just effing rude, you know? And all they want is my shit. And then they just keep bugging me for my shit. And they're all rude, you know? And I said, God, these guys must be really dicks. And I'm going for Tommy to say that. And then throughout your life, you know, you keep that in the back of your head. He goes, man, why is Tommy so upset? Then when you start owning your own shop, you go, oh, okay, now
you know.
You know, everybody wants, you know, I had to touch on that because people spec illusion to cost $1,000. They go, oh, I want miracles. Yeah, all I have is $800. I'm going, okay, let me tell you something. KMD, I run it like, when I open my shop, I want it to be like Rolex and Lamborghini. You know, you don't go into Lamborghini and go, oh man, I have only $200, but I want that yellow one.
Yep.
Dieter goes, well, that's $800,000. Oh, damn. But
$800,000, not just $800,000.
Yeah. But these are the guys coming in the shop going, you know, oh, all I have is $800, but I want that Tommy Warner nest of boxes. How much is it? $30,000. Oh, my God. And I go, well, you know, you do it. So my famous line is, you do it.
Yeah, you build it. Let's see you build it and bring it into me. And it's never going to happen because they don't have the...
Here's another good analogy. You know, you have a brain tumor. Do you want to go to a Stanford guy, a guy that graduated from Stanford to operate on your brain? Or you want to go to Mexico and pay $200? You know, you guys have to... like wake up and you know, you're going out there in public and they're paying you, you know, professional fees.
Sure.
Look good, you know, don't butcher the art and then get a knockoff, you know, and spec, you know, I see these guys go, oh yeah, I don't have that much. I want a spiker, but it's $30,000. That's all right. And then next thing you know, you see them on YouTube. Isn't that the guy that just called me up? Whoa, he bought a knockoff from China. Whoa, that thing is like wobbling. And they present it on a TV show. And I go, this is the guy that called me up. And I go, whoa, he bought a knockoff. And I'm going, don't you have any shame? First of all, you're ripping off Mark Kalin. Did you pay the rights? Of course you did. And yeah, maybe you got that spiker for $2,000, but still, you didn't pay the rights. So you're right. Butchering the art. I'm going, you know, and then it just goes back to, that's why Tommy gets so mad, you know? It's like, people like that, they want everything, but they don't want to pay for it. Come on, man, you know?
I get it.
Uplift the art. You know, I'm trying to uplift the art, you know, make, you know.
You do.
And try to do right, you know? And when a client wanted the head mover bad, I called up Andre Cole and Tim Cole. And they say, oh, you know, I don't know. But then Tim Cole say, I heard you doing great stuff. You know, I seen your work. Hey, let's do it. So, you know, be respectful, you know.
You've earned the respect, and you had a great mentor that taught you all about it. So that was
exactly
fantastic. Exactly. Part of your early development. This is right up your alley, because you use quite a few of these techniques, I believe, because you're really a hands-on kind of guy. What maker techniques are you really good at? Like woodworking, metal fabrication, and I know you do at least those two types of things, right?
Oh man, to be a good fabricator, you have to do everything. I do the woodworking, the metalworking, the car paint, the welding, aluminum and metal, everything.
But no plastic for you, right? You're against plastic. I think we talked about that before, right?
No, actually, I did a plastic piece for Paul Gertner recently. Paul went to every magic fabricator, and they turned them down, and he came to me, and I said, ooh, this is a hard one, and but I'll do it if you really want me to do it. And he said, no, I want you to do it. And then I gave it to Paul, and Paul just freaked out. And yeah, it was all plastic. The tolerance was really tight. It was the hardest build, actually. It's such a small item, but it was pretty hard. It was harder than a big illusion.
I would think so, because hand making things from plastic, you'd probably have to do a lot of slicing and cutting and very fine tolerances with that cutting.
Yeah,
I would think.
I made six to get to the final one. Yeah.
Doesn't surprise me. And I'm sure it's the Rolls Royce of whatever that idea is for Paul. I'm sure it's the best, yeah, the best looking and the most functional, because that's how you're at. What's your what would you say? Are there any maker techniques, like building skills, that you're excited about learning this upcoming year? Anything new that you're interested in exploring? Or do you just go by what you know and you have your toolkit and you just work within that domain and you're comfortable with that?
No, I'm pretty much comfortable with all my old school way of fabricating. I will never, I'll never use CNC. Other builders use CNC. It's strictly a welding torch, aluminum, wood. Like Tommy said, the art of fabricating is a art of the marriage of aluminum, wood, and metal.
Which is very impressive that I think and that's probably, you know, part of the reason why you have so much respect in the industry is because you're doing it all by hand, and to get those precise results mostly by hand is pretty fascinating.
Well, it's, you know, if you do CNC, anybody can do it. I mean, a little kid can just, it's like a gun. Anybody can pull a trigger, right? It's just like, yeah, anybody can, anybody can program something and then push the button and then it cuts it, right?
That's true.
But try to do that by hand, you know. I use a grinder, a jigsaw. You know, I was the first, I think Chance Wolf was the first to use a jigsaw when we first started. I was cutting bevels with the jigsaw because, you know, when you're young, you didn't have not enough money to buy a table saw or anything. So, you know, back then it was a Sears jigsaw. You know, that was the hottest thing for.
That was the thing. That was the new tool.
It was $8, man. It was
$8.
Yeah.
Wow.
And I was tilting that jigsaw left and right to get my bevels, man.
Proof that it's not usually the tools, just like it's not the paintbrushes that make the painter. It's always the artist and what they do with those tools. And oftentimes you see a lot of these really eccentric artists, they have like these old, broken down, crappy looking tools and they're well worn, mm-hmm. and you go, man, how are they able to get those results? Well, because it's not always the tools, it's having that steady hand, and it's having the focus and the dedication. And it's really impressive knowing that. It just makes me respect Ray Lum even more. And I think you know that, so you like the extra street cred that comes along with doing it old school with the $8. Well, I'm sure you've upgraded since then, but you know what I mean.
Well, the only upgrade, I mean, of course, I still get good tools. I mean, I have my line of Fest tools.
It helps to have good tools, but it's not the, you know, you can spend thousands of dollars on amazing tools. If you give it to somebody who doesn't know what the hell they're doing, you're not going to get that kind of amazing result. Helps to know what you're doing up there. So, okay. What is like a favorite prop or gimmick, without revealing methods, of course, that you've designed recently that you're okay with sharing? Just a general overview of what the thing is and what it accomplishes, what illusion it creates.
Oh man, there's so many. Of course, the Comedy Wonder stuff. The Nesta Boxes was just a historical piece.
So just for the viewers who aren't magicians, I'll just jump in real quick and say, to summarize, Nest of Boxes is a classic effect in magic where a item that disappears appears in an impossible location where it's box inside of another box, and it's become a very popular effect. This guy that Ray's been talking about, Tommy Wonder, was kind of the innovator who took that effect and plot to a whole new level, and then Ray took Tommy Wonder's concept and just made it even into a tighter, more mechanically solid and smooth working piece, and that's why it's like considered the Rolls Royce of those types of effects. So continue on the Nest of Boxes.
It would be, I've built so many.
Built something within the past month or something that you're okay with sharing if it's not a super secret project?
Well, the head mover, I think it went a long way from the original Mendoza one that Andre Cole and Tim Cole has.
Head mover, meaning not the spinning head.
Where it moves from left to right. Copperfield had used one in a special.
Okay.
I updated that. That was a good piece. I think, believe it or not, if you ever seen Mark Kalin Spiker on those steps, I took the numbers down a little bit more.
The fire spiker, where he pushes
fire spiker
to the box. Okay.
There's some steps on there that only you illusionists know about.
Right.
If you've seen the pictures, it's kind of impossible, you know, you know what I mean.
I know what you mean. Basically, you took something that was kind of standard, and then you made it slimmer and sleeker, impossibly slim. So I think you've probably already answered this one. I was going to ask, what would be your favorite prop or thing that you've designed in the past? Is it safe to say the Lumball machine or the Nesta boxes? Probably one of those two, right?
Yeah, they're both up there.
They're up there.
The lumbar machine is actually kind of my something that I didn't want to release, but it got released.
Right, which you explained. Hocus, yep.
Well, between Hocus Pocus and me, they sold 130 units. I sold 250 units at back then 1250 a pop. So I don't even know where that money went to. Hey, maybe all that stuff back here.
I think it went into that Iron Man outfit back
there. Yeah, pretty much.
That looks like that could cost as much as a car or something, that Iron Man suit. It's beautiful, by the way.
Thank you.
Beautiful.
I should take it for a flight later on.
You should.
It has and everything.
That's how he's going to peel out of this interview, folks. He's going to get inside. That's actually what the real Iron Man looks like. He looks like Ray Lum when he takes off the... Anyway, I shouldn't have said that because now the secret's out. But anyway, what would be considered the Ray Lum official DIY fabricator fail of all time? Like your biggest... I'm sure, you know, but how do I put this? I'm trying to make you look good, but on the same token, I just want to let everybody know that mistakes happen, mm-hmm. and sometimes they're funny, sometimes they're dangerous. Franz Ferrari mentioned he was doing something with Michael Jackson, and he was very young, mm-hmm. And there were some issues, indoor versus outdoor illusions.
A lot of stuff. I mean, yeah. There's every day. I mean, you're welding something, and... you go, oh man, I welded the wrong spot, and then as a fabricator, there's horror stories every day, because illusions are custom made, and then it's not like a store bought item, right?
Right.
It's all custom. These guys come with drawings, and then you go and they expect miracles. You know who you guys are, you know? You go, oh, you know, magic's real here. But then you go, okay, this needs machining. This needs 40 hours of welding. It needs so much stuff to make it happen. And then all of a sudden, when you mock it up and halfway, you go, damn, it doesn't work. Then you had to sit there and stare at it. And they had to throw a hammer at it to make it work. And next thing you know, it worked. So,
yep.
I mean, it's like that all the time. But sometimes you get, you get there and you go, oh, man, it works. And, but that's a life of a fabricator. You know, the secret to be a good fabricator, you have to know how to hide your mistakes, you know, like all my props when it goes
out. And accept them, right, as they come.
Well, that's a real fabricator. You have to show, there's like props that's too perfect, you know, it's CNC and it's so perfect that there's no, like a fabricated item, you can see like there's mistakes here and there, but yeah, you know, mistakes happens and you learn to fix it and most of my stuff, you know, they're so complex. You go, damn, you know, God, why is this not working? So you sit there and you go, okay, let's machine something for this. And then you go over that hurdle. Then you go, okay, that's working. Everything's smooth. And all of a sudden, that's the box is a great example. You know?
Yeah, I'm sure you had many, many swear words were said during the making of that one.
Well,
that's just like insane.
Tommy's version was a prototype, you know. Before he died, he had 10 of them that he wanted.
It was like a barely working prototype, right? He's just enough to where it works, and he could do it.
Yeah. Yeah, and then he had 10 ready for sale, and it was going to be all machined and nicely made. But it didn't take off because he passed away. But there's always mistakes. I'm not going to lie. There's no way that because you're working with custom props.
Sure.
And all this stuff has never been built unless you know, Mark Kalin ironed out the fire spiker. That's all he built. Unless stuff is ironed out and then they have all the drawings and you know, then it's smooth. But a custom item, a good example is Ozzie Wynn's table that he used on Fool Us.
Oh, that was, yeah, that was a...
He came to me with this idea. Oh, yeah, here's this idea. Then, you know, we keep going through it and then kept going through hurdles to make it work. So
the overarching theme here, I think, is as a creator, as a creative person, it needs to be expected with that territory because you're creating something from the ground up. A lot of these things never even been done before. So we need to shift our expectations, all right? Because people always have frequently unrealistic expectations. They go, oh yeah, I've got the drawing, you can do it, right? Well, it's not as simple as that. You have to expect, okay, never been done before, there's gonna be problems that we've never had before, mistakes that may have never been made before because we're just breaking ground here. So I think that as a concept that people need to get more comfortable with. See, like I'm a perfectionist and I know you are, and when I was a lot younger, I used to just be so hard on myself. I'm like, oh man, I didn't get it right the first time. And then the older I get, I realize to expect to get it right the first time, you're very lucky if you do get it right the first time. Mm-hmm. And with new things that are breaking ground, it often never is the first time. It's got to be a concept that you're so passionate about, just like you were with the Lumball machine and pretty much everything else you do. You say, okay, I see the end goal, but I'm going to have to, there's going to be this whole journey that I'm going to have to go along. Mm-hmm. Many, many, many versions made before we get to that end goal. So, it's just good life experience.
Another good example is I used to be in tournaments and I used to go into the ring a lot. And then you know you're going to get hit. Those are your mistakes, right? There's no way you're not going to walk out of there without a black eye.
Yeah, that's so silly as a martial artist to go, oh, yeah, nobody's ever going to hit me, ever.
Mm-hmm. There's no way you're going to go in and like your opponent is like the... You don't know what he knows, right? So you go in there, you can't go in there all cocky and say, oh, you know, I'm not gonna get a scratch, man. I walk out of there with black eyes, broken ear, you know, of course. But you learn from that.
Yes.
And then throughout the years,
if you're smart, you do.
let's say you get throughout your tournaments, you get 10 hits. Well, later on you go, okay, now I'm getting 7 hits. Now I'm getting 4.
Yes.
Wow, now I have no black eyes. Now I only get 2 punches now. And so the moral of the story is it's kind of parallel. Now training with Tommy, talking with Johnny Thompson, Tim White, all these guys, working with Bill Smith, you know, that's your training, so you learn to not to make that much mistakes, right?
Yes, you're reducing those hits.
Yeah. Now my props, when I go into something, so when somebody gives me an idea, I look at the paper, I go, huh, okay, I got it. And but you run into a stump here, but then you go, okay, I solve it quicker now, right?
Yes.
Before you go, man, it takes me a week to solve that. Now I go, give me a couple hours, and then I solve it. Then I go into the next hurdle. Now, let's say a prop, maybe 2 hurdles, and I'll get it, you know? Before it was like 15, you know, to get it right. So, you know, good example is Paul Gertner's prop where you go, it looks so simple.
It's just this little thing. Oh, it can't be that much.
It's like this big, but I can't tell you what it is because
I get it.
Yeah, but he said, yeah, I know this is hard. And I love people that bring something to me and they already know. Like Paul, you know, Paul, he's a working legend, right?
Yeah.
So he already knows. He goes, I know this is hard. And I love that because if you look at it, Sean, if you've seen it, you go, damn, that's all it is. But then when you dissect it, you go, yeah. Oh man, look at this tolerance. It has to do this, has to do that, has to match this.
I totally get it.
And plus, it's plastic. And then you have to machine it. And then you're going, oh my God, when you're done, you go, look at this, it's done. And then Paul goes, how the hell did you do it? And I go, don't ask. Yeah. Don't even ask. And then he goes, how many did you make? I go, like 6, 7 to get to this one. And he goes, what'd you do with the rest? I got so mad, I threw it across the shop.
Yeah.
It's in the corner of the shop. You know?
Yep. I have a graveyard of just stuff. And then I just go, I just want that out of my life. Let's move on here.
Yeah. I hate those moments.
Man. No, I get it. But those moments, if you're a trooper like you are, like I am, like all good creators are, sometimes you have to step away from it a little bit. But then once you come back, and then when you finally do it, like in episode 1 with Mario, he said that it's just great helping to teach his kids the importance of sticking with something because of that reward of that satisfaction of completion when you're done.
Yeah.
So that's, that's always nice.
Honestly, I'll tell you this much. The Tommy Wonder Nestle Boxes 3, even though being close to Tommy and seeing the original one and working through it at a point where the final point was the clock. At that point, I'll tell you right now, I'll admit it, I was going to give up. I said, damn, you know, at this point I'm going, God, why is it sticking? Why? And I kept, like, I just want to just throw it across the room, but I'm going, I can't. I put how many thousands of dollars into it?
Oh, I'm sure. Yeah,
I bit my tongue. I go, I gotta do it. I gotta do it for Tommy. And then, I hurtled through. But here's the thing. Then you see these knockoffs that just surfaced just recently. Have you seen it?
No, but you can send it to me after.
I'm going, dude, honestly, you have the balls to do it. I don't even have the balls to do it, but I did it because I pushed myself and I said, this is going to be finished. It's got to be finished.
It's part of your legacy now, Ray.
I know. And then you see these guys do it and I'm going, come on. They stopped the clock. I gotta tell everybody, the clock is a tin cookie pan, right? And I'm going, that's cute, man. That's really cute. You know, you went to the container store and bought a cookie can.
They went to the dollar store and said, give me a cookie jar.
That is creative. You stop there, huh, buddy? Go back and work out, you know?
Yeah, go back and exactly do more pull-ups. More
push-ups. I don't get it, man. I don't get. Don't do it. See, you're not honoring the guy, and then I don't know where to. Knockoff just really gets me going.
I know that's a sore spot with you and rightly so. And that could be a whole other episode on how to spot a knockoff.
You got Jesus. You magicians gotta quit doing that. You're not helping the art. You're killing it. You know, why kill the art? The art has to elevate, you know? It has to elevate. Already we're losing legends, you know, which is sad. And then, you know, come up. You know, the generation got to get better. You know, that's why I'm trying to do the best of the best. That's why, you know, Owens going out of business. I said, you know, Owens was like, you know, you remember, this is what I'm trying to say. You remember when you were a kid? Younger, you're still young, but when I was a kid, remember that Owens Magic catalogs, the Abbott's catalog? You know, I couldn't afford a Owens catalog. I saved up my money, it was just $20 to get a Owens catalog. And then when I ordered something from Owens, you see that white label and that box, and you open it up,
the whole package.
You swear that light will come out of the box. You know, you look at it, it's all wrapped nice and it's made so well. Like there's no flaws, you know. Owen had that tradition. You know, Owen Magic was legendary.
Yes.
Well, and then when they went out of business, when I opened KMD, I said, you know what? I'm going to take this further. You know, Owen had their legacy. I wanted to create a company that's just like Lamborghini, where Lamborghini, when you buy a Lamborghini, they give you a model car of the Lamborghini. They give you all these perks, and then the mm-hmm. Lamborghini is so clean and it's so expensive. Well,
sure.
I want
to get what they pay for.
Yeah, I want people to come in and say, KMD is like Lamborghini and Rolex. You know, I'm not, you know, Rolex will never sell something for, you know, $10. Lamborghini sure. will never sell anything for $1,000.
Sure.
Well, I want to be like that. I tell people, hey, the Nessa box is $30,000. My fire spiker from Mark Cannon is $30,000. Everything is $30,000 and up. And they go, oh my God. Well, what's the old saying? You do it.
You do it and you get what you pay for. And in this case, with Ray Lum and KMD Fabrications, you will get what you pay for in spades. And with that being said, where can people find you?
On my Facebook, you can check that out.
I'll put a link.
Ray Lum on Facebook, and you'll see all my updates, all my builds.
And your website, do you have a website for your fabrication?
Yeah.
I know. Yeah.
KMDfabrication.com. You can see all my testimonials from every magic people in the world, like all the top people I work with.
Yes.
My performance, I'm still a performer. So illusionistraylum.com. So
excellent.
Those are the three places where you can find me.
Excellent, Ray. Well, this has been a fascinating interview, especially hearing all the backstory behind you and Tommy Wonder. I think people can take out of that, you know, the importance of finding a good mentor, and then this is how it will shape and affect your life. So this was educational, inspiring, and funny, and it was the real deal. We cut to the chase. Ray Lum is a no BS kind of guy. He will tell you like it is.
I want to tell everybody that make sure you hit the likes. If you don't, you know.
Whoa.
I'll make sure you hit those likes. You hear me?
He's going to pummel you into a beating with that thing that just came out of nowhere. That's insane. Ray just blew my mind. He just blew the top off this whole interview. Ladies and gentlemen, I don't know, I should go ahead and put on some pads before I get my front teeth knocked out, because Ray's gonna hand it to me like it is. Ladies and gentlemen, you've been watching Making Magic, and definitely like this video or Ray will beat you over the head with a baseball bat. Feel free to subscribe to the channel and check out Ray at KMD Fabrication and IllusionistRayLum.com. He makes some amazing stuff for the best in the biz. Ray, thank you so much for jumping
on
my podcast. And this was an amazing chat. We'll see you next time on Making Magic.
Thank you, Sean. We'll be right back.